if you don't perform, nobody else really cares because it doesn't impact them, it doesn't affect them.
Hey everyone, I'm Katie Traxton and you are listening to Anatomy of an Agency, the podcast that lifts the lid on everything that goes on behind the scenes in the talent industry. In this episode, I spoke to Adele Nicol. Adele is an athlete who competes in multiple disciplines at international level and in fact, rather different disciplines. She has finished second in a bobsleigh World Cup event and won multiple golds in the shot put at the British Athletics Championships. I started by asking her what it's like training for both summer and winter Olympics.
So I've done athletics since I was 9 years old. It's probably my first passion, but I have found a new passion in bobsleigh. So trying to navigate them both is difficult, but I feel like there's so much crossover. Essentially, bobsleigh and shot put are similar in the fact that you're moving a weight and you're moving it fast. So the athletic stuff is fairly easy to maintain, but the technical aspect of it, obviously learning a skill to drive a bobsleigh at 90 mile an hour compared to learning how to rotate and release a shot put at the perfect angle, they're slightly different. I think you just have to be somebody that's able to compartmentalize and have small goals in attempt to achieve the long ones.
But one of the things that really interests me is a lot of athletes refer to being in the system and then out of the system. You must have to be quite independent kind of from the get-go because you're not in one system, you're in two systems.
Yeah, I think what I learned along the way, so I'm 28 now, so I'm still fairly young old in the sports that I do. Yeah, really old. I feel old because I've been doing it so long, but in the sports that I do, there's so much longevity. Like two of the girls in the World Championships in bobsleigh this year were 42. I think.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and they were like competitive, like going for medals. So I'm not bothered about like where I am in terms of like my age in my career, but what I've learned is so valuable. Like in terms of being a part of a system, it's about not just saying yes because you think that's what you should do. It's about, is this the right decision for me? And what's the consequences of me just going along with something? And I think what I learned probably like a hard way is that if you don't perform, nobody else really cares because it doesn't impact them, it doesn't affect them. They might care in terms of, oh, we wish you could throw further, or we wish you could have done better, but it doesn't change their life. So taking control of my system, not like being a part of one, or like not my identity being like a part of a system, me taking control of what my system looks like and who I want to work with. And I think that's one of the most important lessons I've learned along the way, is making sure that I'm not just saying yes because I'm trying to please people, because I was really guilty for that and then ended up just suffering for it because I was just trying to tick all of the boxes. But the thing that matters most, and the only thing that matters in sport, is performance. And it's like sometimes it can get so noisy that you're trying to tick all the other boxes and you forget that why you're even on the funding system in the first place, why you're even doing the sport in the first place. And it's because you're good at what you do. So let's just like keep it like that's the center. You can get lost in that sometimes.
And is that focus, which I think is so important, on, you know, looking after your own destiny, but is that focus an internal one, or do you end up having to advocate for yourself a lot?
I think I've established a really good working relationship with everybody around me now. I think when I started my journey as a dual sport athlete, it wasn't being done, so it was very difficult, and I did feel like I had to advocate and prove myself a lot. A lot of athletes will retire from one sport, transfer into another. That's quite common, especially from track in the summer and then into winter sport if it involves moving fast. But trying to like competitively participate in both sports hasn't really been done before. So that is something that when I wanted to attempt it was not necessarily supported. And I had to say, okay, that's fine, and go on my own. And I had no money, no support, no, I wasn't a part of any system for my first Olympic Games. I was not a part of a system.
Oh, wow.
So there was no funding for British bobsleigh for the Olympics in 2022. And I was a part of like the Welsh athletics program prior to starting bobsleigh in 2020. And when I wanted to try, it was not heard of, so it was kind of like, oh well, you go do that, we'll see you when you get back type thing. So I kind of disassociated myself with athletics, but also didn't go into a system for bobsleigh. So I just went on it alone with me and the crew at the time. I took a risk and I took a gamble, and I just realised that I kind of lost a little bit of happiness, a little bit of direction in what I wanted. And taking accountability and stripping it all back and being like, okay, what can I control? What can I outsource? And I think delegating roles is super important as well, because I was somebody that used to just try and take on everything. And like, as I've got better as a sports person, I've delegated roles out. I'm capable of doing the roles, but it's recognizing when's the right time to give that role to somebody else and communicating with them properly to trust them to do that as well. So for me, strength and conditioning, I did my own strength and conditioning to go to the Olympic Games. I did my own programs with the help and advice from people I trusted, but I did it. Whereas now, somebody else leads my S&C, and it took a lot for me to hand that over, but it was the right time to do it because I wanted to unlock a new level. But I made it very clear from the start that I just wanted to be able to have some input and ask questions. And I think being able to ask questions respectfully and politely is a real skill as well, because you don't want people to think that you're undermining them, but you absolutely are entitled to ask questions for things that...
I think you can say you absolutely are undermining them. You're just doing it very subtly.
You are undermining them, but let's pretend that we're not. You're absolutely entitled to ask the questions. Because it, again, like, it's all about taking control. It's like, I can't just be turning up, which I used to do for years, turn up to the gym and just do it because it's on a piece of paper, not really knowing what it's trying to achieve, what I'm trying to achieve, what my body needs. So yeah, I think someone described me recently as being, what was the word? And I thought, that's not an insult, that's a compliment. And I think it was forceful. And I thought, well, yeah, because I know what I want. Like, I'm in a stage of my life where I know what I want. And they didn't mean it as an insult, but they meant it as, if I've asked for something and I don't understand the answer, or I don't necessarily think it's quite the right thing for me, like, I'll challenge it. But that's because I'm in a phase of my career where I've learned so much and I've made so many mistakes that I'm now in a position where I know how to avoid making those mistakes.
I've got so many things I want to ask, but next, where I'm going to go is, do you think that this ability to be autonomous at quite a young age, I'm going to say, it is in part due to the fact that you didn't necessarily have an easy, like, family life, mm-hmm. and then you've gone and actually academically trained in psychology. Do you think those things are both critical to where you are now?
Yeah, I think, obviously, doing my master's degree in psychology and having spent some time learning about developmental psychology and things like that, I just think that your early childhood years and your development throughout different phases of your life is so crucial to how you approach things, how you conduct things, what you're willing to accept as well. And I think from a young age, I've had to fight for everything that I've got now, that it's helped me in ways that you can't teach at this age. So I do think that people are going to be in different situations when they're younger. Some people are going to be more privileged than others. Some people are going to have more opportunities, like, open to them. But regardless of your start in life, I think you just have to capitalize on what you're dealt with. And not fight it either, because I think so many people spend their time fighting their situation. I think there's a difference between advocating for better and fighting a situation and not really doing anything about it.
Because it's wasted energy.
Yeah, and I, like, that's one of the biggest things I absolutely hate, like, complaining about something that you can't change, or complaining about something and not putting it into action. It seems so pointless to me. I think that my parents were amazing when I was growing up in terms of supporting me in being really ambitious and being ruthless in never giving in when times got tough, but equally didn't push me, so I never felt like I was forced to do it. It was always an intrinsic motivation. It was always that self motivation and drive that kept me going. And I think that when I started feeling the reward for hard work and how that felt, then I just got hooked on it. And coming from such a small town that is classed as a deprived area, being able to get out and seeing like the impact that that has on my community. Like, they think I'm a celebrity, and I'm just, for me, you know, I'm just one of the normal athletes in the venue here. But from where I'm from, nobody does that. Nobody thinks that they can get out, and nobody thinks that the things that they see on TV is a possibility. So for me, like, it, internally, it really helps that I've become that person for the kids in my community as well, because they now see that I'm somebody that comes from the town. I'm not from like the outskirts in a big house in the village. Like, I don't come from one of the big houses in the villages. I come from in the center of town. My family are from the town, and I've kind of broken the mold with my family as well. Like, my dad's side of the family are all from Welshpool, and I've just kind of broken the mold with what people probably expected me to turn out like. So I think all of those things that led me to where I am now have 100% helped me to be successful, because I come from humble beginnings, so I appreciate everything that I've got now, and hopefully like my character never changes. But along the way, I've built so much resilience that regardless of where I come from, I'd stand toe to toe and like, let's go on the start line type thing, regardless of who I'm competing with.
Well, in essence, you've become a symbol of hope and opportunity for a lot of people where you're from. I imagine people listening are sort of thinking, oh, goodness, she's doing shot put, she's doing bobsleigh, she somehow had time to do a master's in psychology. We're not even going to touch on the fact that you've actually got a healthy long-term relationship. What I want to come to is, you've also had time to do TV.
Yeah.
How do you balance these things, and how, when you get given what is potentially like a golden opportunity to go on TV, do you go, oh, I'm going to say yes, despite the fact I'm already trying to manage an almost unmanageable athletic program?
I think for me, every opportunity that comes my way, I see it. I try to, obviously we're not perfect and we all do fall into like a negative spiral sometimes, but I try to see everything that happens to me as an opportunity to experience something new. Whether that experience turns out to be good or bad, you've experienced something new and it's opened another door. And at that time, actually, when I did that TV program, I just got back from the Winter Olympics, and it was 4 months until the Commonwealth Games, and I was potentially going to be away for 5-6 weeks filming. And I thought,
in the Caribbean.
Yeah, in the Caribbean. Such hard choice. Yeah. But being in the Caribbean, I knew there was going to be no facilities. It was about what could we use that was out there that I could adapt to. And I think one of my biggest skills is adaptability. I see a lot of athletes struggle when their day or their routine gets thrown off, whereas I'm like, cool, how do we solve this? And I would say, when someone asks me what's one of my biggest strengths, like, I'm a problem solver. Whatever like gets thrown my way, like, I might have a little breakdown or a little tear, but it won't last long, because I'll be straight into problem solving mode. And I think I've been that way since I was younger, but that's, I guess, like, also my drive when I was in education for wanting to know more, wanting to learn more. Everything that happens to me, good or bad, I just take it in my stride and I deal with it. And I always think, and this is why I feel like I've become the adult that I have a mentality of, I will deal with it. Whatever happens, I'll deal with it. Like, I've been in some horrible situations and I'm still here. So I think the lack of worry about what will I do, knowing that I'll always be okay regardless of what happens to me. I might struggle through it, but I know I'm gonna be okay. It kind of diminishes that fear. And that's why I can manage all the different projects, and when things come my way, I'm like, cool, let's make it work. And that's my whole ethos, like, let's make it work then. But on the flip side of that, I have had to learn how to say no to some things, because sometimes previously I was taking too much on. And now when I'm thinking and talking about winning Olympic medals, I need to be a little bit more reserved and conservative with my time. So I've started to say no a lot more, and it's like just weighing up, like, okay.
No, I can't do the washing up, James.
That's way too much for me today. But in terms of like going to events and attending events, it was like, I was going to everything, and now it's like, okay, 3 hours in the car, couple of hours at an event, 3 hours back. When am I fitting in training? If I do fit in training, is it a quality session? Like, there's some things now that I will have to say no to, but in terms of opportunities that I think I can grow from and I think that I can have value from, I'll make it work.
Yeah, well, one of those, social media. So on the side of everything else, at a moment when, you know, the last few years, people's social media followers haven't really been growing. And there's lots of reasons for it. Some is because people cruise around just wanting to watch content. So maybe like views are still there, but followers aren't there. Yours have been skyrocketing completely against the trend. How are you having time to do that, and how are you doing it?
Literally, one of my reels that I posted last week has now gone over 500,000 views again. And it's not something.
Even your best reel.
Yeah, it's not my best reel. My best reel is on, there's something like 18.5 million, which is crazy. It's not something like, I wouldn't say like I'm a content creator. It's that I just post me and I just post stuff that I like. I'd say, in terms of the views, I've tried posting audio that I want to post and it might not work. It's like, you kind of just got to go with the trends, even if the music isn't really what you like. Like, I'd say like that's one of the biggest things I've found with reels. It has to be an audio that's being played and being like, is popular amongst the majority rather than just popular amongst like what you and your friends might like. But what I have noticed as well is, I feel like for sports people, the reason maybe why the following has kind of slowed down is CrossFit and Hyrox is such a big thing now that us sports women and men are kind of getting drowned out in like the huge emphasis on like fitness now, which is great. Obviously, I love that fitness is a big thing, and I love that strong women is like something to admire now. But I feel like that's probably why we're getting drowned out as sports people, because it's not... I think that in terms of social media, we're in an era where if people feel like they can relate to them, then they'll follow them. And like, as Olympic athletes, people can't always relate to us because we're seen as like...
on a bit of a pedestal.
Yeah. Or like just seen as somebody that, oh, I could never do that, I could never achieve that, or they must be, you know, almost robotic. Whereas like, you're doing a CrossFit class and there's someone that's doing something you think he looks like you would want to have a go at, then you're probably going to follow their journey. So for me, I think I would love my social media to be a little bit more authentic. And by that, I mean like, off camera, I swear quite a lot, right? You know this. And I'm just a little bit more unserious than I probably post online. But my social media, I would say, has grown so much from the things that I'm doing for the younger community that I just don't feel like it's appropriate to be that person. So I want to keep my profile as like that role model that I wanted when I was younger. A PG version of myself. Like, that's what essentially what my Instagram is. I'm not saying it's not me, it is me, but it's a PG version of me. Because obviously alongside all the other bits and bobs, I have my children's sports academy that runs in Mid Wales, and that's one of like my proudest achievements. And doing that and visiting schools around the UK is something that's kind of become a part of me and my life. So yeah, I have lots of children following me and I don't want to disappoint them with being a little potty mouth, so.
Well, I want to end on a high, because you mentioned Wales a few times.
Yeah.
This is not a leading question because I don't know the answer. When you're looking to qualify for Team GB, is being a Welsh athlete a disadvantage? Is it an advantage because you get more attention because there are fewer athletes in Wales? Yeah. What's the difference? Because most of the people we talk to are Team England and Team GB.
Yeah, I would say that it can be an advantage. I would just never say being Welsh is a disadvantage. Do you know what I mean? Have you seen this tattoo here? It says,
to be born Welsh is to be born privileged.
There we go. So the answer is, yeah, it's a great, it's like, it's only ever going to be
a good
thing.
We've had lots of Welsh guests on the podcast recently.
Have you?
Yeah, I think it'll be like 3 in a month.
Wow.
Yeah.
3 is a lot. That's like 75% of us. So I would say it's only going to be a positive. Like, the community in Wales is just indescribable. Like, I was trying to tell one of my friends the other day, when I travel, people say, where did you come from? And I speak a little bit, like very, very little bit of German. So I say, ich komme aus Wales. And they would be like, where the hell is Wales? And they'd be like, Großbritannia. And I'd be like, yeah, but Wales. Not England, specifically Wales. And I had to explain to my friend from America why that was so important, because I just was trying to describe how like Welsh people are so proud to be Welsh that like we would never say, oh yeah, we come from Britain, really. We would say, oh yeah, we come from Wales, which is in Great Britain. And I think that being a part of Team GB is obviously, it's an amazing achievement. But I think being a part of Team GB as an athlete from Wales, where we have fewer people, fewer facilities, like less funding, like all that kind of thing, like it's almost like we've defied the odds, and like we've really had to fight to be there. And nobody expects it from us either. Like everyone just assumes like everybody looks good comes from England, but then a couple of us each year in different sports come from Wales, and it just makes me really proud. And like my great nan, so this, the reason I got this tattoo was because, so my great nan is actually, that side of the family was first language Welsh, so she used to love like Welsh poetry. And before she could, like, so she passed away at 101. It was like amazing to have her for so long. But before she passed away, before she could like not write any longer, she wrote a poem out for me, her favorite poem, and I kept it in my purse for years. And then when she passed, I thought, I really want to get a tattoo. And I got one of the verses from the poem that she wrote for me. And she's kind of like the Welsh bloodline. So I just think that it's a different type of pride coming from Wales. I'm sure that English athletes are proud too, but like the Welsh community is just one that I'm really privileged to be a part of.
Well, I for one can't wait to see how Adele gets on at the Winter Olympics in February next year. Watch this space. That's all we have time for today, but do get in touch. It's gvo@goodvibesonlytalent.com on email, or @goodvibesonlytalent on social media. Other than that, from me, for now, it is goodbye. And I'll see you next time on Anatomy of an Agency.